Well, good morning, everybody. It's Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you with another episode of Inside Curling. It's the post-World Championships, and we're really pleased to be joined. Okay, let me read off some stats. Seven-time world champion, okay? He won four in a row, 18, 19, 20, 21. And, of course, he's the most recent champion, 2024. He's got Olympic medals. He's got 30,000 Grand Slam wins. and he just keeps rolling. I'll tell you the other record he has. Kevin just pointed out, we only have the winners on our show. So Nick's been on our show now 10 times. And we're joined by the one and only, and you know what? The recording was going to shut down with 1 second to go, and Nick got here just in time. Congratulations, Nick Adine. Thanks very much for joining us. How are you, man?
Thank you so much. Yeah, I just woke up for this podcast episode, so I'm going to do my best. But yeah, very happy, very thrilled to have won another world and kind of get back on top, I guess.
Sort of staying on top. Yeah, good for you. This has been a whirlwind for you, of course. You were calling in Toronto at 10 o'clock in the morning. You win this past weekend. You got to squeeze a party in.
Yeah, we flew in Monday, actually. So just basically played the final, went straight to the banquets, the media, obviously, and then tried to really party and celebrate. But we were all very tired after a long week. So slept about 3 hours, I think, and then hop on the flight to Toronto. And then, last night we played Brad Gushue again in the first game here. So it's been a quick turnaround for sure. Not much sleep in the past two weeks now, and probably averaging 5 hours or so. But it's been definitely worth it.
And when you did have a chance to sleep, you went over and shot some pool with John Morrison instead of going to bed.
Yeah, I at the Slams, it's a fairly easy schedule nowadays. Like just one game a day the first 3 days here. So. And for us, actually, it's not bad staying up late because of the time change. So the evening game last night was rough, but kind of, sleep in a little bit, try to stay up at night in a couple of days, we'll be fine. So I wouldn't be too surprised if we're 0-2 and then start getting our groove on. But I also wouldn't be surprised if we're 0-5 at the end of this week, not going to lie.
Okay. Everyone wants to do what Nick Adine's doing. You're on a heater, as they say, over the last, you know, 5-6 years of world championships. What's the drink of choice, Nick? I'm going to start drinking what you're drinking when you're partying.
Actually, last night I just had a few beers. That was just very nice. It doesn't overwhelm you, so to speak. So right now we're all like lacking sleep and food and all that. So it doesn't take much, not going to lie, but still super nice. Just seeing friends, just kind of enjoying the moment. It's been a little while since we won a big one now. So definitely highly motivated going into the Worlds now, and winning it just feels amazing. We weren't sure we were still going to be able to do it, but we proved ourselves and some of the haters out there wrong. So that feels very nice. And going into the Olympics in a couple of years, I think we're in the best form ever, actually. So just going to try to keep it up now.
Yeah. I like the way you say we've won a big event. That'd be the Worlds, Nick, that you won the Worlds. And from one winner of the World Championships to another, we'll flip you over to Kevin.
Hey, Nick. Hey, thanks a lot for taking the time. Yeah, your body's just got to be going through contortions after the last week you've had. You and I had a great talk. I don't remember which game it was after when I interviewed you after the game. And you just said, Nick, is the right before you took the game off at the Worlds, the last round robin game, because you'd said, oh, my God, everything hurts. So now that you're done the Worlds and you're here in Toronto, how does everything feel, your body?
Yeah, it doesn't feel any younger. I can tell you that. It's been a bit of a roller coaster. Actually, last summer I was getting back to decent form. I was doing quite a bit of training, but not trying to overdo anything. Just like rehabbing old injuries and getting back in shape. And I was I was actually feeling pretty good doing some other sports and just taking it easy, like nothing heavy, nothing too adventurous. But then another couple of minor injuries happened, actually at the physical testings we did for the Olympic Committee. So that was a bit unnecessary. We had them pretty late, about a month after the summer training stopped. So for the past 5 months, I've had a couple of ongoing, like I tore a couple of tendons, so they need to be repaired. And as soon as I get back now,
the annual surgery.
Yeah, little surgeries there, but hopefully it's a quick fix, so to speak. So hopefully once that's done, I'll be fine. But just overall, just my whole body is not recovering, obviously, as well as it used to in the past. I'm used to doing a lot of training over the years, and the past few years, I haven't done a lot at all. I'm just basically doing rehab to just strengthen everything that's not working 100%. But it's definitely getting older and definitely getting harder to come back from, especially like a world championship. You go so hard at it mentally and physically for not just the 10 days you're playing, but like the weeks leading up to it. You're so focused on just one thing and eating, sleeping, all that. Like everything worked really well. And obviously that's why we could perform as well as we did. But after now, I kind of just feel like I left it all out there. I'm not sure how many weeks it'll take before getting back to 100% again, but definitely worth it. I'll do it again anytime as long as I can.
Hey, one quick question I'll let Warren in. So you've won 7 worlds now. Is there like a goal? Do you have a number in your brain? Is it 10 or
the goal would have been like 2, I think. So we're way past that, and now I don't really know how to set a new goal. But I think the Olympics obviously is the main one. We want to try and give it a chance to repeat. That would be such a cool feature to do in the sport of curling. But for world championships, I don't think we haven't really set a new goal after we won the Olympics. The worlds is more of a it's a goal to lead up to the Olympics, but we're overly thrilled already. Like when we won 4 to tie some greats of the sports, we were all thrilled about that and didn't really see past that point. I think now we're just trying to really enjoy it is the way to put it. I think we're really enjoying playing the worlds and the Europeans and getting back to the Olympics, and we need those events to really getting in good form. I think mentally most of all, to just feel really hungry, stay at the top of our game, kind of compete against the other teams at that type of environment. When you have like the arena, the long event, you collect all the information you can to play close to 100% at the end of it. And that's what you need to win these days. So those are the moments we kind of still keep playing for.
Great. So thanks for joining us, Nick. And again, congratulations on your huge accomplishment and on an outstanding week. That's one of the most outstanding weeks of play I think I've ever witnessed at a world championship. And the final game, you were in control most of the way. But let's talk about that for a second. So the 9th end, you came down to throw your final rock and you've got a decision to make. You could chip out the Canadian rock at the, I think, back of the 12-foot, which would allow them to blank. Or you could take a bold step and go around a center guard and try to bury it to either steal one or force them to take one. And that's the decision that you made. You made it pretty well, but not quite well enough because Grushu was able to get around and get his 2 to tie it up going home. What went through your mind in making that decision, which virtually was, do I want to be 2 up without the hammer or tied with?
Yeah, I think in an event like that, when the ice is good, when you're in good form, the team is playing well, I think you want to have control of the game. I think coming home with hammer is kind of what we play for. Like the goal going into the game with hammer would have been to be tied with hammer. So we were fully happy with the situation we got. Obviously, we wanted to force him into playing the run back, and that would have been kind of a shot to nothing. If he ever misses that, we win the game right in 9th. But giving him 2 was still fine. We kind of knew we would have to play like something fairly difficult. They're so good at generating a situation to be able to steal. So I kind of focused the whole whole ninth and 10th, basically just coming down to, I'm going to have to draw for the win for sure. Anything else would have been a bonus. So I was very prepared to draw for the win, and my team too, we kind of kept taking those split times and tracking the ice as best as we could. And then obviously the last shot was out wider than anything had been played. So it was a little bit tricky, but I still felt very comfortable, like confident playing a draw, because I was so prepared mentally to play a draw. So even though we didn't know exactly what it was going to do, I knew I would be close on the throw, and I knew my sweepers would be really close on judging and sweeping it there. So ninth end, basically just trying to give him a shot to possibly lose the game. So the tapping out their shot was never an option, actually. I kind of told Oscar right away, if he makes this anywhere into the rings, basically we come around the center. It was never a question. Like we could have frozen to the rock if it would have been fully buried, but now the center guard was in the way of the freeze. So basically a tap was the only option, but then that doesn't really force him into a difficult enough shot. So coming around the center was basically the only shot in my mind, at least, but wanted to be higher to force him to run.
Well, you did it to perfection, and it was a phenomenal finish. And I think you were probably holding your breath with that final draw coming in as to was it going to come up enough. And fortunately for you, it did. So again, fabulous ending. Let's talk about something else that seems to become a topic again these days with the sport, and we have a lot of action on social media about it, and that's brushing, sweeping rules. Do you think anything needs to be done with the sweeping rules as they currently sit, or is everything okay the way it is?
This is going to be a tricky one. I could take hours talking about the brushing these days, and I'm not sure how much I should say, actually, because I feel... like if you watch some of our throws when we're a little bit high side, sometimes we don't sweep it at all. We don't try to carve it. For the testings we've done, at least we're not seeing nearly as big a difference as most teams out there. I would say 99% of teams, seem to think they can carve it a foot, and that's just not possible. It's not happening. If you see someone carve a foot, it's only because you want to see that happening. If you actually measure what happens, it's not that effective. So in my opinion, the brushing is fine. We're the smallest team out there. For sure, if you compare to the bigger teams out there, the taller, the heavier, the stronger guys, they would have a much higher pressure than us. But still, we come out on top. So sweeping the rocks, I think, it's definitely an advantage to be tall and strong and sweep at the right point, to have the technique to carve it a little bit, for sure. But you can still make all the shots without all that. So I'm not sure the focus is kind of on the right thing for a lot of teams. They focus so much on throwing it hard enough and wide enough to carve it, and then they roll out high side. So in my opinion, a lot of teams probably need to do a little bit more testing, a little more checking into what the brushing with this one material we use actually can do. It depends a lot on the ice conditions, but on the ice we played at Worlds now, we're not talking inches even. It's just a little bit of effect, but if you can see more than a couple of inches, any type of shot, in my opinion, that is somewhat delusional. It is just not happening.
Interesting. So Oscar in particular uses a motion that you refer to as a hard clean. We see the odd player do that, but he seems to be the main one. What's the thought process behind the hard clean, which is more or less like a hard snowplow?
Yeah, it is saving a lot of energy. And like I said, we've tried the different angles and the carving and the holding it straight, sweeping it to basically just like polish the pebble, make it go farther, and the plowing or just keeping it clean with a heavy clean basically makes sure you cover the whole surface at all time. You don't have a forward and backward stroke. Obviously, for a long week like Worlds, and you need to save your energy too. And if you can keep a high pressure covering the whole surface at all times, we just kind of feel like that is just as effective, but it saves a lot of energy. So probably overlooked by a lot of teams, but obviously since we started doing it, a lot of teams have picked up, and most teams, especially on the men's side now, are doing the heavy clean. It's just so hard to go 100% sweeping the whole way. So you're going to see more of that for sure. It's just a no-brainer.
Nick, listen, man, thanks very much for coming on. I got a couple questions for you. Nick, curling, you talk about the injuries and you got your regular check-in. It may be the only sport where when someone says, what hurts? And you could say, well, my ankles, my knees, my hips, my shoulders, my neck, and my back. What do you guys do, Nick, to try and avoid injury sort of with a workout? You know, all athletes do something, but how does a curler spend his off ice time working out?
Oh, I don't think I can speak for all the curlers. I think we're like the odd one out. I think we do a lot more training, a lot more other sports than most curlers would do. Especially being full time, traveling over 200 days a year, it's a full time thing for us. We can never really recover fully, which is the main problem. So the more we travel, the more we need to recover. But at the same time, you also need to practice and train to stay fit enough to do all this and to recover. Kind of a weird situation where you got to train enough to kind of stay on top,
yep.
But you can never recover from that training that you do. So in my opinion, I kind of do as much as I can to stay on top for as long as I can. And when I can't, then I'll just quit. It's kind of that simple for me. I will never really just go down to half the amount of curling or something. I'll do 100% to win until I can't, and then I'll quit.
Before you go, I want you to help me. We do picks every Grand Slam. Okay, to try and pick the winners. I've picked you to win the Grand Slam, and then I want you to pick the other men's team who's going to win, who's going to go in the final.
Yeah, I don't think we will win this slam. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, you are. Come on.
Yeah, we'll try our best to make you win that bet. But
okay,
I think actually Brad Gushue will be highly motivated to win, and I think Brendan Botcher will be highly motivated.
Okay.
Maybe Mallet as well. Those three. So I'll say Gushue.
Gushue, okay. And what about, I need two women's picks before you go.
Rachel Holman has just been unstoppable. And I think the ice and the rocks, they're extremely sharp. They kind of start curling in your hand, yep. which suits teams with more rotation, kind of a more aggressive release. So Rachel Holman is a massive favorite on the women's side, in my opinion.
Okay. And then I went with Einarsson. Does that sound like a good idea?
No, because of because of the technique. Like if the ice and the rocks would have been different, yes, they would have just as good a chance. But on these ice conditions, I pick Rachel Holman for sure.
Nick, thanks a lot, man. I'm going to bet $10,000. If you guys lose, you owe me $5,000. Okay, we'll split it.
Can we bet a beer instead?
We'll bet a beer, man. We'll bet a beer. That's Nick Adin. That's the reigning world champion. And that's him getting up for us after a whirlwind of a few days. Congratulations, Nick, on winning the Worlds. And good luck the rest of the way, man. We'll be watching for you. Really appreciate you coming on, Nick.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you so much.
Good luck. Yeah, have a good sleep.
Thank you.
Back to bed. Okay, there we go, Kev. Thanks a lot. Everyone tune in. We'll get to see your pretty face, Kevin, on TV. I think you need a little more makeup, Kev. There's a little shine off the top, okay, of the forehead, okay? I've noticed
there's
that.
Definitely some shine.
Yeah, you need a little more blush or whatever it is they put on. Warren, you've brought up something here. There's a sort of competition, you're saying, that's going on inside the competition event. What's that all about?
Well, for the Canadian teams, there's a lot at stake here in this Players' Championship. So, as we may recall, that four teams from the men's and the women's will get direct entry into the Scotties and Brier based on the points they're going to have on the 1st of May. So on the women's side, it's pretty straightforward. Rachel Holman is Team Canada. She's in there. She has 490 points going into this. Jennifer Jones is going to be in at 316. Carrie Anderson at 251. And the fourth spot will go to Caitlin Laws, because the teams that could chase Caitlin Laws are not in the Players' Championship. But on the men's side, quite a different story. So Brendan Botcher is in with 366 points. And Brad Gushue is in at 286 because he's Team Canada. But now here's where it gets interesting, because we have Mike McCune, Matt Dunstan, and Reed Carruthers are all breathing down each other's neck for this last spot. So going into this, McCune is at 213, so he's got the spot. But it's going to really depend upon what happens with those teams in this competition. And John Cullen had an interesting scenario that he posted on Twitter, X, a couple of days ago. And he said this: McCune and Cooey, if they both lose in the quarterfinal, and Carruthers and Dunstan don't qualify, then Dunstan would miss by 0.1. So if that was the case, you'd have Cooey in at 232, McCune at 224.3, and Dunstan would be in the last spot at 224.2. So it's going to be really close, and then certainly everybody needs to watch what's going to be happening with those three teams as we go down the stretch to see who's going to get those last two spots.
You'll find this surprising, Warren, but I'm ADD, and those are a lot of numbers for me to swallow. Okay, Kev, those are a lot of numbers for me to swallow. There we go. You know, we told you, of course, yeah, everyone heard the interview yesterday we did with Nick Sulski. And now in this show, of course, we had Nick Adine on. Warren, we do picks. We've been doing it for a while. We're gonna pick a couple of teams each. But I went to the man, Warren. I went to Adine himself. Kev, I think that must be the most unpredictable answer we've ever heard from a curler when I said, do you think Einarsson's going to win this thing? No, said Nick. what did you think of that comment, Kevin, before we make our picks, that he said it's not the right setup for her?
Right, you know, and that's, isn't that funny? Well, he's just shooting right from the hip, but I'll tell you what just happened. Team Anderson lost yesterday, so she was 0-1. But while, like, Nicodine did not know, but young Schwaller, Xenia Schwaller, that's Yannick's cousin, Andreas Schwaller's daughter, who's a world junior champ, they just beat Anderson. So Anderson's 0-2. So, but Nick would not have known that, because when we talked to him earlier, that game hadn't happened yet. So he was right. You can't, we shouldn't say that. She's only at 0-2, so she's not out of it. But an interesting comment from Nick.
Yeah. And his other one was, I think we're going to go 0-5 and we will not win this thing. I was like, what the? Here's my picks, Warren. I'm going with Nick. I'm picking Nick Adine and Gushue, and I'm picking Rachel Holman. And I think Einarsson's going to come back. I'm going to go. No, I can't go again. Yeah, I do. Okay, Holman and Einarsson.
Holman and Einarsson.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I've got to go with Botcher. And I think White. White's going to be my other one.
So Warren has Botcher and White. Who'd you take on the men's side?
Gushue and Adine.
And on the women's side, I got to go with Terenzoni. And Gim, I think. Gim.
Okay, Kev.
I've got to go with Bruce Mowat. And then the other pool. Well, Cooey is defending champ, so I've got to go with Cooey. And on the women's side, defending champ, Vrano. And, oh boy, this is a tough one. I'm going to go with Team Kim.
Okay. We're set. We'll check Friday night, see how we did.
Okay, boys, next. Of course, you know by now, if you didn't, Nicodine won the Worlds. God, I love that guy. He's a great interview. Kev, what's your final take besides the obvious, Nick winning, but what'd you take away from it?
Well, you know what? Generally, when you'd go over to Europe to play in a world championship, the crowds weren't huge most of the time. Well, they just did a wonderful job in Schaffhausen. The last weekend, sheet A wasn't being used anymore. They actually covered it and then filled it absolutely from end to end with more bleachers because the whole building was sold out. But Switzerland weren't in the finals. They weren't part of it. But it didn't matter. The building was still absolutely full. So I just got a hold of Rona Howie. Rona Martin used to be the Olympic gold medalist from 2002. She's the one who sets up the building. Like that's what she does for World right. Curling. So I just reached out to her and I just said, like, how many extra seats did you put on sheet A? And then how many people were in the building for the final weekend, the Friday, Saturday, Sunday? And she said, well, certainly over 2,000 in the building, because it held 2,000, but they were standing room only. Like, everybody was standing mm-hmm. everywhere. So I'm not exactly sure, but say, you know, 2,200. And they put about 400 seats down sheet A. So really impressed how they did. They had an outdoor, if you want to call it a patch area. And it was funny, there wasn't any music, Jimmy, to start with out in the patch area.
Right.
But the Italians, they ran downtown with no music. They went and got a big boom box. And they had the music blaring in the, you know, and there were hundreds and hundreds of people there. It was really, really good. I can't say enough. Like, the curling was great. Sweden, Canada, Italy, Scotland. That was how they finished up. And then Germany, USA, fifth and sixth, because they didn't win that qualification game. But the curling was great, but the entertainment and the, I guess, the life, the party, the noise in the building was really, really special.
Cool. Warren, what'd you take away from it?
I think echo Kevin's comments. It was a fabulous event to watch, just phenomenal curling. But I noted again in the last day, and we've talked about this in the last couple of weeks, Sweden has the hammer. When two teams are that close, as Gushu and Adin are, the team with the hammer, they've really got a leg up. And certainly Sweden took full advantage of it. Blank the first, take two in the second. So now Gushu he's down two. He's got to score three to get a leg up again and then allow us a steal in the third end. And so now he's down three. So that hammer in the first end, two teams as evenly matched as they are, is huge. And I'm musing again going forward. Is there another way of doing this that maybe needs to be thought about, which we've talked before of hammer in the first and hammer in the six, but you can't have it both.
You're still on, Warren. We're giving people updates. The best in the West concluded last weekend in Saskatoon.
All right. So I need to first clarify. We had indicated that this was a U25 event, and I was advised that it's not quite, or wasn't quite a U25 event. Kind of an interesting rule. You had to be between the ages of 20 to 40 to be in this event, but your total age could not be more than 100. So that was kind of unique. It wasn't a U25. I guess it more or less makes it a U25, but a different set of rules. And it involves BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba are the provinces that part of this, which is why it's best in the West, and each winning team gets $10,000. So on the women's side, in the final, Abby Marks from Edmonton defeated Kayla Skirlik of Calgary, 6-2. So the winning team, Abby Marks, Elsa Croft, Kim Bonneau, Juliana McKenzie. On the men's side, Ryan Kleiter of Saskatoon was defeated by Ryan Weeb of Winnipeg, 7-2. So congratulations to Ryan Webb, Tyler Dillio, Sean Flatt, and Adam Flatt. So a good event, and I think those are the type of events we need to see more of to bring along the future curlers.
Kev, you're down in Toronto. The Grand Slam is, well, underway, I guess, right? Did it start Tuesday, Kev, or Monday? Monday was travel day, wasn't it?
Yeah, for a lot of the teams, travel day from Switzerland. Yeah, exactly. And then come into Toronto, and they started Tuesday, yes. And we're just Wednesday morning. So there haven't been many games yet. But this is the 31st Players' Championship, Jimmy. It started in 1993 in Calgary. Wow. That was, okay. Yeah, I don't think a lot of people realize how long the Players' Championship's been going. That's why I wanted to mention that. Listen to the men's pools. Like, this is really kind of funny. So Pool A, you've got Retornaz, fantastic. Mm-hmm. White, Yannick Schwaller, Dunstone, McEwen, and Craik. In this event on the men's side, there are six teams that have won the Players' Championship. Mm-hmm. They're all in the same pool. You've Botcher, Mowat, Guju, Nicodeen, Cooey, and Jacobs are all in the same pool. And they've all won the Players' Championship before. So it's crazy. How could... Yeah. But it's not a rigged up... Like, it's just a ladder and that's how you find out which pool you're in. It just happened that way. I don't know if that's ever been the case in history where you have a pool of champions. Okay, and then on the women's side, you've got four skips that have won it. Jennifer Jones, of course, who's won six players' championships. Carrie Anderson has won two. Hasselborg and Vrano. And Vrano, of course, is the defending champ, along with Kevin Cooey. So anyway, that's kind of the makeup of it. It's funny listening to, well, everybody, but Nikki Dean saying Holman, she's 62 wins and six losses this year, you guys, for the year. 62 and six. Like, oh, my goodness. And the last thing about the players, as everybody knows, other than the Olympic Games, the players was always my favorite event. I've heard Jennifer Jones say that a lot over the years as well, because it's only the very best. 24 best teams in the world, 10 are from Canada, 3 are from Scotland, 3 are from Sweden, 3 are from Switzerland, 2 from Italy, 2 from Korea, and 1 from Japan. So that's kind of how the players works.
That's what's happening around the curling world. Hot Rock Topics, brought to you by Coyote Tractor. If you have work to do, Coyote has the tractors, the UTVs, the ZTRs, and compact construction equipment to do it. Coyote, we dig dirt. We're going right to the emails, Warren. We got an email here, Warren, that you want to take this guy on. His name's John. Let me whip through it here. John says, on the topic of rules in the game, the most important thing to be cognizant of is not to kill the spirit of the game. Ensure players at all levels have the most seats at the table and that there are voices of reason, common sense, and wisdom guiding the sport that can apply context and vision beyond the pros and the money changers. Holy man, Johnny. For example, and I speak for a lot of the grassroots players who feel that people of influence took the 30 pieces of silver and thus began the advent of the World Curling Tour and subsequent ranking system, placing a huge dagger in the heart of curling, the grassroots common curler, for whom had a full-time job but could still play a game at the same time that required physical skills and, more importantly, great mental skills and teamwork in order to master the game, but also had a healthy, fun social aspect as well. It was just being able to have the dream, the idea that there was a chance, even though ever so slim, to play a champion at the club level in a Bondspiel and maybe, just maybe, even represent your province at a Canadian championship, or you knew someone who did. Back then, when the popularity of curling was growing, TV networks smelt an opportunity to cash in and thus unintentionally neutered the common curler in the same way many other sports have done to their grassroots. The so-called touted benefits for the sport never materialized. In fact, the inevitable complete opposite happened, because those involved in the co-opting of the sport never really actually cared enough to ensure the grassroots curlers were the beneficiaries. It used to be an extremely long road to qualify for the Briar out of your club, then your district, then your region, then provincials. But many teams kept coming back for the chance. I got an idea what you're going to think of this, Warren. He says, let the grassroots curler, Kevin. Let's let the club guys have a shot at going to the world championships. That's effectively what this guy's saying, Warren. You go first, Hanson.
Well, we put that in there to make a point. You know, I've been hearing this since I ever first set my foot on a sheet of curling ice a long time ago. Oh, those competitive players. They're ruining the game. You know, they're not contributing anything back. They don't give back. They just take. They just take. And, John, thank you for your email. But, you know, that's the way it was at one point in time, probably back in the 50s, and it was dragged into the 60s. But the world has changed. And we have things like the Olympics and the Grand Slam that have evolved with the sport. And it's drawn a clear line between those who are the very best, those who are maybe a notch below them, and those who are just recreational players. And unfortunately, we aren't at the time anymore when those really mix. And they really need to have their own separate slot or pew, I guess, as to how they operate out of. But, you know, if I look at other sports, if you want to have a round of golf against, I don't know, back a few years ago, Tiger Woods, how much do you think that would have cost you to play against him? You'd have to put out a fair chunk of coin, because why would he want to play against you? And this is the whole thing. God bless the club players and the people who come up through those ranks. But you can't put them in the same category as a Nicodene, who we talked to today, who that's his life. That's what he does. He throws thousands and thousands of rocks, and he has this contribution, and his dedication is not the same as the guy that plays every Monday night. So they don't mix. And the fact that we're trying to mix them, I believe, is more harmful than it is anything else. It's setting up an expectation by people that really isn't realistic. Anyway.
Yeah, if you heard the interview yesterday with Nick Sulsky, the new CEO of the Curling Group, who's taken over the Grand Slam, Warren, he said he wants to get to a place where curlers don't have to have a second job, that it'll be full-time. So they're only going to get better, Warren, the curlers.
Yes. So, again, thanks, John, because it allows us an opportunity to point out the fact that we've got to get into 2024 and not be in 1959. Anyway, Kevin, I'm sure in your life of curling, it's you came after me, but you've experienced similar things with being the evil competitive player.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess my
brain, evil,
the evil competitive player, isn't that something? That's all I wanted to do was be an, I guess, evil competitive player and practice hard. I don't think anybody would argue back in my day. I don't think anybody practiced harder and spent more time in the ice, and I just loved it. So yeah, to me, you got to make a decision. What are you going to do? Are you going to be and try to be a champion curler? There's or not. I don't think you should be able to do it once a week and be able to compete with the Nicodenes. It just doesn't make any sense. But I do love the curling club championship, where the people that are the 5 to 10 handicappers, if you want to take it to golf, have a chance to win a championship. And I think it's wonderful. I think that is just an absolute great idea for the people who play at the club to go and battle and try to win a national championship, because it's really good curling at the top end of the club championship. Now, is that team going to be able to take on Brad Guju or Nicodene or Bruce Mowat or Kevin Cooey? No, but they're not supposed to. That's different sides of the sport. That's okay. That's okay. I don't think I should be able to go play Fred Couples in a round of golf. It would be no fun for him as I'm walking through the bush all the time looking for my ball. You know, it's the way it is. It's all good. I think it's good. And you know, I'm down south a lot in the U.S. and curling is growing leaps and bounds down there. So like the thought that curling isn't growing, boy, you know, and in Asia, U.S., it's growing massively.
Hansen's always said they're two different things here, club curlers and high performance. So, Kevin, you're siding with Johnny a little bit, okay? On the email,
I don't think so.
I don't want John to not listen to our show anymore.
Did I misspeak? I think it's two totally different roads. Okay. You decide which road you're on, and
John, I got a feeling we're going to hear back from John again. There you go. That's Hot Rock Topics. What are you hearing? We've noticed throughout the year how close the number of players have come to running out of time. The commentators did not mention when Nicodene let go of his final stone. He had 8 seconds left on the clock. Guju had a bunch of time. He had 42 seconds. Kev, you probably came through it when you didn't have to manage time, and then you did. How do you leave it so close, Nick? Could you imagine if he runs out of time in the final stone of a world championship?
Yeah, those guys, Jimmy, they have complete control of the clock. They're 8 seconds. Like that would be a ton of time for Kevin Cooey. He never has that much time.
Right.
Or Stefania Constantini. She never has that much time. She was down in the women's worlds to 1 second once, 2 seconds. Like it just really, her team are going 5, 4, 3, 2, and then, you know, pushes out and away you go. So Nick would never run out of time. It is a concern that, you know, the players, you want to make sure you try to have 3 minutes left per end near the end of the game. That's kind of the math. And if you're less than that, then you better get going. But the teams are really good at managing the clock now.
So is there one player in the team who kind of looks after the time management?
Well, on a team like, say, Kevin Cooey's, who's always close, the entire building, the crowd, the people, the commentators. What can we all know? It's going to go down to 5 seconds. So, you know, the cameramen automatically have a camera right on the clock because you know it's going to be just a couple seconds left. But he's never run out of time. Like, you know what I mean? It's just somebody on the team needs to make sure that whoever it is knows, hey, you got 20 seconds, you know, 10, 8, and then get on with it.
Right. Warren, you love the clock, though. That must have been one of the great changes when that came in.
Oh, God, yes. It's a must. But the question is, how do we deal with this whole thing going forward? And I think this is another thing that needs to be evaluated. I think we've talked before about timing probably per end has got to be the future, I believe. And then the consequence is not as drastic as it is now. So if you maybe went out of time on the fourth end, you might lose a point or two. And of course, you still have to not run out of time on the last end. But if you go by end, it maybe is a little more manageable. But I think the other thing, I wish the television networks had put those clocks permanently on the screen so that you can see how they're ticking down. Because many of them, they're running the time closer than we really know, but it's never really mentioned. So a note to both TSN Sportsnet, put the clocks on the screen.
You heard it from the governor himself. Get those things up there.
Because it's important. It's really important. And right. It's a part of the drama of the whole thing that needs to be maybe focused a little more.
Okay, there we go, boys. A lot of meat in the bone, as they say. Another great show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We really appreciate it. And thank you to all our great sponsors who do it each and every week. Send us an email, insidecurling@gmail.com, insidecurling@gmail.com. Join our Facebook group. Check it out, Inside Curling. And thank you again to Jackpot City, Coyote, and Goldline, who make all of this possible. Remember, it's Grand Slam week, the final. And we're going to give you some updates on Friday and Saturday with everything going on at the old Maple Leaf Gardens where Kevin is. So thanks a lot, everyone, for joining us. Thank you, Warren. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Nick, for coming on yesterday, and certainly for Nick Adine, who really answered the bell, baby, okay, this morning. Well, let's tell it, Kevin. You have to wake him up. Yeah.
Well, he warned me, though. He warned me. I got a hold of Nick yesterday when I was flying into Toronto, and I knew that he had flown the day before from Switzerland. I was with him in Switzerland, of course, so we've just been traveling all over the place. So would you mind doing the show on at 10 o'clock on Wednesday morning? That's where we're going to tape. Right. And he gets back to me ready to go, ooh, we have a party planned for Tuesday night in Toronto. So I said, a blurry Nick Adine will be just fine. Yeah. Awesome. Great guy.
We'll find out the results. He took on Johnny Mowarn in a pool game. We'll have to find out who was better.
Well, I would put my money, from what I've seen, on Nick, I think.
Right on. Take it easy, boys. Everyone have a good week. We're going to talk to you again Friday with an update from the Grand Slam in Toronto. See you later, Kev. See you, Warren.
Thanks, Jim. And I want to thank Mike, our producer, who has to now edit what you just created. Yes. Thanks, Jim.
Don't blame me. Why do you always get the last word? Why do you always get the last word?
I'll get the last word.
I want emails from everyone saying I'm okay. I'm okay. See you later. Yeah, thank you, Kevin. Thank you.